This is Beth Smith. I'm going to interview Bob Rush down here at his office at 124 West 2nd Street. And he's going to tell us about his life in Salida and his job as an attorney of law. Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
What will you tell us today?
Well, I think that the history of my family means something to me. My great-grandfather and grandmother and my grandfather came to this valley before Salida existed in 1880.
And who were they?
Patrick Rush was my grandfather, and his Anna was his wife, and my grandfather was Charles Rush. They had lived in St. Louis, and I don't know why they immigrated here, but they did. And my grandparents lived here many years. In about when my grandfather was 16 years old, in approximately 1885, his mother and father lived outside of town a few miles and working at a railroad camp. And my great-grandfather was murdered by an insane person at that time, and my grandfather Rush then, he was on his own at age 16 because we didn't have Social Security or anything like that, and he got a job on a survey crew, and he was in Leadville in the early days when Tabor was up there and the mining was active and so forth, and he went on a survey crew to Aspen, and he was up in that area when Aspen was a small mining town. And so forth, and then he married my grandmother because he was working for the railroad at that time here in the St. Joseph's Church.
And what was her name?
Minnie Crank was her maiden name. They were married in that little old wooden church that was there for many years in 1896. My grandmother at that time was working at the old hotel down in the railroad yards, the Monte Cristo. I was in that when I was a small boy with my dad, and it was quite a facility. But anyway, my grandfather, Rush, worked in this area, and he worked for the railroad a total of 51 years. And he was an engineer, but he lived in Minden for part of the time, and my father was born in Leadville in 1898,
what was father's name?
William S. Rush. He was my grandfather was he was president of the school board in Minturn, but he sent my dad down here to live with my dad's grandmother, who lived at 541 D Street, where my grandparents lived until both of them were gone. So my dad graduated from Salida High School in 1916, and my mother's parents lived over in the Gunnison area, and they had come from the East Coast, and they were the Van Alstyne family, and my mother was born in Gunnison in 1905 on a farm outside of Gunnison, and they moved over here in about she was born in 1905, and they moved over here about 1911 or 12 or something like that. And my parents were married in 1926, and I was born in 1929, February 21. And I had a very close relationship concerning the school all the years because my grandfather had been on the school board, and my father was on the school board 24 years here in Salida. I served on the board 12 years. But anyway, I was very fortunate to have four grandparents in Salida, which not everyone has. And I attend Longfellow School, of course, for 6 years, and we had some very fine teachers in those days. And
can you give us the names of any of them?
Mrs. Coulter was a principal. She was a widow, I believe, and she had a son in school, and Victoria Benosky, who lived up on F Street, most people remember the Benosky family. And Miss Belts was there, and Miss Newton, and Mrs. Holman, who just died a few years ago, and Miss Starbuck, who was married, was Glenn Starbuck's sister. She later married Al Geist, who some people would remember had a car repair shop out on Highway 50. And it was Miss Poe was there, and those were the main teachers I had, and there were some others, but we had a little discipline over there at Longfellow School, too. You didn't misbehave, or you had to go to the office, which everybody was scared of.
Of course.
But then, of course, I went to Kessner Junior High School. Mr. Reichman was our principal, and we had Ruby McKenna, who's still living, and she thinks she must be 90 years old, but she moved here when I was in the eighth grade, because I remember she used to make us do long division for punishment for those of us who got in trouble in school. And we had George Eichmann then was the principal, and he also was a basketball coach when I was in high school after Neil Meering left. And my school days were fun. We had not all the things kids have today, of course, but we had a summer softball program starting in grade school, and we had a league for the young kids and league in the afternoon for the older kids. And those days there were two softball leagues at nighttime, and so we enjoyed that. And I remember when the swimming pool was finished, I think, in 1938. And boy, we were proud of that, although my brother and I used to swim in the river sometimes. And the reason was that it was a bad thing, but the Mexican kids in Salida were not allowed in the Salida swimming pool. And that was, so our Mexican friends, which we had many, we often would go out and swim in the river after we played softball, not telling Mom and Dad, of course. But I could say we had in Salida, you know, there were a group of Greek people who had merchants. We had the Austrian people that worked out at the smelter. We had Italian families. The Italian families owned most of the land between Poncha Springs and Maysville. The Postereros, the Lionellis, I can't think of the other families, but we had the Mexican folks who worked here, who immigrated here from the San Luis Valley, most of them, and they had jobs around town. And but we were very poor in those days. Nobody had much any money, and but we enjoyed the sports. And the big deal was when the coach would come over to the grade school, and we would play volleyball or soccer ball or something. And so I had we enjoyed school. And, of course, Salida High School was an excellent school. We had I think outstanding teachers. Mr. Custer was the most outstanding in my opinion. Of course, he taught me Spanish, and he was an exceptionally great teacher. We had Miss Mosgrove and Miss Scott taught English. Lauren King was the principal. L.A. Barrett was the superintendent of schools at that time. And Mr. Hampshire, who passed away a few years ago, was teaching science, and Dean Rouse, who died just a couple, 3 years ago, was teaching the girls the bookkeeping and the typing and all of those things. And Mr. Rouse died at age 100 a couple years ago, or three, I think it was. But anyway, the great impression we had in the early days when we were kids with this Salida football team, because I can recall when we won three state championships in a row. And
did you play football?
No, I didn't. But we had Coach White, who Whitefield was named for him. And but I remember the last game when Grand Junction finally beat us after 3 years, and Coach White always wore the same coat, and they tore his coat up. But I remember also we beat Canyon City for like 25 years in a row. But then later we were in the state championship in football in 1941, December 6th in Fort Collins, the day before Pearl Harbor. The next year we got beat by Loveland, I think. In the third year, 1942, we got beat by Boulder. But we were competing in those days with all the schools in the state. So, but we had the softball teams, and we weren't the greatest basketball players, or because we didn't let's work as hard as people did on the football team. But I played on the basketball team with Neil Mehring, who was our outstanding coach. It took the teams to the state championship three times from this little town. And he left here and went to La Junta, and then that was during the time when you couldn't hire a lot of people, and George Eichmann, who'd been the principal, became our basketball coach. But we went to the state finals when I was a junior, we got beat the first day, which was unfortunate, but it was a big deal to go to the high school. We had a tournament over at Alamosa in the basketball, yeah. And Durango would come there, and schools from that area would come, and we managed to win the tournament a couple times. But anyway, I graduated from Salida High School in 1947. One thing I was always proud of was that I was president of the student body. I won by one vote. And my brother was president of the student body 2 years before. And I think Dr. Hutchinson and his brother had the same distinguished career, if you want to call it that. But I was always proud of that.
Well, you should be. Do you have just the one brother?
Yes, that's all. My brother Bill, who's... he was born 1927, and he lives now in Wichita, Kansas. And he was a great older brother for me, I'd say that. Because we got to go to the Salida Theater on Friday night, because they had the cowboy show. And then they had a serial, you know, an ongoing story, and it was usually cowboys and Indians and stuff. My dad would give us a quarter, because you could get in the show for 10 cents, I think. And then we'd go over to the Greeks, which is now a dentist's office on F Street. And we could get a Coke for 5 cents and a chocolate sundae for 10 cents or something. And once in a while, we'd go to Jenny's Lunch out by the ballpark, Marvin Field. And we could get for 10 cents, you'd get a really nice hamburger. And softball was a big thing in those days, too. We had some very fine softball teams, and the Zingone brothers, and Albert Costello, and some of the DeLeos. We had a lot of softball players that did very well. It was fun, because we played Canyon City and all those teams. So anyway, my brother was gone to the Merchant Marine after he graduated in 1945, so he was out in the fall of 1947 when we enrolled at Colorado University.
Both of you?
Yes, we both at the same time, because I caught up with him since he was off in the Merchant Marine for 2 years during World War II. So they asked me a major, and I had in mind that I would major in foreign language, because I had learned Spanish from Mr. Custer and from 2 summers in Mexico. So they thought I put down language, and I thought I was going to learn the French and so forth. So they thought I was going to be an English major, so I had to straighten that out. But anyway, I graduated with a degree BA degree in 1951. But my major was international relations. I had thoughts of living in South America or Central America, or someplace where they spoke Spanish. And so I was really interested in that part of the world and so forth. But that was during the Korean business, so I graduated in the fall, and in the spring, and then in the fall, I knew I was going to be drafted, and so I didn't ask for any special treatment in those days. We got drafted. We went to the Army or the Navy or whatever, and some of our local guys served with distinguished services in World War II that I knew. But anyway, I went to the Army in October 10th of 1951. By that time, I was married to Lenora Brooks, who still lives here, and I had my basic training at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and then I had some advanced schooling and radio operations and so forth, and I went to Korea, and I left in late April 1951, because I remember my son was born while I was in San Francisco waiting to be shipped overseas, and but I couldn't come home because everybody was fine, so I shortly thereafter they sent us overseas. First, they sent us to Japan, and anyway, I went through some more very brief schooling, and then I was sent to Korea where I served in the infantry. I wasn't on the front lines, but I was close enough to be scared all the time. But anyway, I finished I returned to the United States in about the June 1st of 1953, and of course, the Korean matter was terminated in July of 1953, but I didn't have much rank. I had a job where I was supposed to have been a sergeant, but I wasn't, but I disliked being in the Army, and I disliked being in Korea, but that was what we were supposed to do, and it was a miserable existence, but nevertheless, I got home, and by that time, my son was born, and I decided that my plans for international work in another country might not work so well. And so when I was in Korea, I wrote my dad one time and said, I think I'd like to go to law school. And he knew Dr. Thompson, who was a famous local eye, ear, nose, and throat doctor who knew the president of the university. So I got an application, and I enrolled in the law school in that fall.
Now, did your father have the law business going at that time?
Yes, my father went to... My grandfather insisted my dad have a college education because Grandpa only went through the eighth grade or ninth grade when his father was murdered. So my dad enrolled after he graduated from Slida High School in 1916. He enrolled in Colorado University. And he graduated from Colorado University in 1922. And he came to Slida. Of course, in those days, he didn't have any money. And so he went to work at the railroad for a year, or almost a year, to save up a little money, because he didn't have a desk or a chair or a book. So he finally got enough money to open his own office. So he started practicing in 1923.
Father's name was what?
William S.
William S., okay.
And but in those days, you know, it was during the Depression. I was a child of the Depression, and my father didn't make a lot of money, but I remember one of my friends said, well, his dad got a better job now. He got $30 a month. He'd been working for the WPA, and he got another job in a restaurant for $30. And so we didn't have much, but we had a great time. But anyway, my dad served as assistant district attorney, and then when I joined him in 1956, because I went summer school to get out of school as early as possible, and So I moved back to Slatta. Everything I owned and my wife owned at that time went in the pickup, except for the couch. We had to ship that. But anyway, I started practicing with my dad, and of course I didn't have much business for a while, but he was assistant district attorney at that time, and he got this district attorney to appoint me a deputy district attorney without salary, so that I could get some experience in the courtroom. So I very soon started trying cases, and continued to practice in this office where I'm sitting now since February of 1956. So we had a general practice, and we've always represented Slida Building alone and the old First National Bank and Sangre de Cristo Electric, and we represented the school district I did for a number of years and the hospital district and so forth. And during that time, I spent 12 years as a member of the Slida School Board, which I enjoyed very much. And during my tenure on the board, we did most of the building that was done up there. We converted the old gymnasium into the auditorium and built on all new buildings for the high school. Of course, we had interesting thing was we had a bond issue pending to do all these constructions, and it was going to be a hotly contested bond issue because it was going to cost several hundred thousand dollars. But while I was on the school board and before the election, the old Slida High School building that was built in 1910 burned down. Some people accused the school board of doing that so they'd pass the election, but really we did not do that. But anyway, that made us made it easy for us to get the bond issue passed and so forth. But of course, at that time, Mr. Moline he was a teacher when I was in high school, and he was an extraordinary teacher. Taught us history, and we thought, who's that little guy come from Connecticut here? And he married Miss Ingledew, who's still around. And he was just an excellent teacher. And Mr. King, of course, he died. And then we had, I believe Mr. Moline followed him and was principal, and later, of course, was superintendent for a brief time. But even then, I always thought our schools had the best education you could get. And it was because we had good teachers. And the reason we had good teachers is that we attracted them, and people liked to live here. And it wasn't that we paid them so much money, I think. But when I was on the school board, the first time they decided that we would adopt a salary schedule. We never had one before. And if we thought that we had an exceptionally good teacher, we paid him more. Well, we couldn't do that with under the salary schedule. Mr. Redmond got a little more money, and Mr. Custer got a little more money, and some of them, because they were outstanding teachers. But the other teachers were exceptionally good also. So, and even when I was on the school board, I thought we had exceptionally good teachers in the great educational system. There were, as you know, the hospital was an important part of the Salida history. And I just looked it up the other day, and the hospital building was completed November 10th, 1885, and it was just the one structure at that time.
Are you talking about the one down by the river?
Yep, that's the only one we ever had. Well, not the only one, but that was the railroad hospital. The railroad bought the land. The railroad paid to construct the building, and I have pictures here in the office. It was quite an extraordinary building. And that hospital, there was a fire there in 1890 that burned some of it, but it didn't hurt. You can still go in the rafters and see where there were some burn spots. But anyway, the hospital Oh, there was another building out there where they kept people that had communicable diseases. They used to call it the pest house, I guess. But
was that the one out on 160?
No, it was right next to the hospital.
I see.
Where there's a fountain out there now, but
yeah.
You can see it in some of the old pictures I have.
Well, there was a pest house out by the poor farm.
That was a poor farm, and they had a pest house out there. And I remember going past there, and I knew where it was, and I knew why those poor people were there, which was barely in existence, I think. But then the hospital was remodeled in 1920. I think for 25, I'm not sure when they built that main extension, but when they did, they had a big sunroom at the end of the building, which would be on the west side. It was a great big room across the back, all windows and wicker chairs and things like that. Very comfortable. Because it was very, you know, very light there, and people could stay there. And even when I was a young man in Salida in high school, even I knew that there were some railroaders who didn't have families. I guess they just spent the winter in Salida in the hospital. They let them do that. But we had some exceptional doctors. Dr. Fuller, of course. He was a great friend of ours, my family, and he delivered me and my brother. And he died about 1960, I think, but 61. But you know, when I was growing up, we had. Now we have like 24 doctors in Salida, and when I was first here in high school, we had four or five: Dr. Larmer, Dr. Schaefer. Were two of the outstanding ones I recall. Dr. Schaefer used to live over on G Street, I know. And so we always had very good service, and the docs did everything. They did the appendix operations, they delivered the babies, and they took care of the old folks and everything else. We didn't have any specialists here until Dr. Thompson moved here, who was a friend of my father's, and he did the eye, ear, nose, and throat, and he was above what was the old Woolworth building at that time, and he took tonsils out in the office, as did Dr. Parker, who was in the building over there where the Willow Bend is, Willow Tree is now. They did stuff like that in their offices, and we wouldn't think of that today, I'm sure. But the hospital's always been very important, and still is, and fortunately we have excellent people here. But one time I was talking to my grandmother, Ben Alstein, and about the hospital, and she said that during the flu epidemic, in which one of my uncles died from the flu, she worked at the hospital, which is at First and G Street. And I said, "Well, Grandma, that's the Sherman Hotel." And she says, "I know, it used to be the hospital before the Red Cross Hospital was built." And I didn't know that at the time, but that's what it was. And I verified that later on with some of the stuff I have. Stuff being books and so forth and pictures. But the other thing, of course, was the railroad was a huge business here at that time. We had 16 trains coming through here every day. And, of course, the old Monte Cristo Hotel was there, and the old depot was there, and it was quite a place, the hotel was. I went down there a few times with my dad, and I remember about the dining area and what was there and the chairs that sat around the... They had like not a bar, because they didn't serve drinks. It was just a where you could sit up at with a group of people. But it was a very fine place, and the old depot was very interesting, and it's too bad they tore it down years ago. But then, you know, I was down in the shops with my dad because he knew all the railroaders, and they had machinists down there that could do wonderful things. They could make parts for the engines and so forth. And we had the roundhouse down there, and we had the of course the first rails coming in Salida were narrow gauge from. Went to Gunnison, went to the San Luis Valley, went to Canyon City, and so forth. And finally they got what they called the third rail, which was standard gauge. And so We had a lot of railroaders, I don't know, several hundred, because they worked in the shops, and we had the conductors, the brakemen, the engineers, the firemen, and so forth. And we had people would travel over Marshall Pass in the wintertime, when winter was terrible, and some of them had cabins over in on the other side of the Monarch Pass, and a lot of railroaders here, they went from here to Minturn and back, and some of them had cabins in Minturn because they'd have to stay overnight. But the railroad was the main industry in those days, and a very good one. The guys that worked there, the men that worked there, they made a living, and so that was a great industry. And you can see now we don't have any railroaders, and we don't have any trains going through Salida. But we would go down sometimes for recreation, I guess, to see the trains come in and see the people get off. And I recall going down there when President Roosevelt came through on a train and stopped in the depot and got out at the back of the caboose and made a speech. And of course, I was pretty young at the time. And in 1948, Harry Truman came through here on September 20th, 1948. And I remember then I was down there at that time too. But anyway, one thing we had which was very unusual was called the barrel transfer. And if you know about the railroad, they would fill the ore cars up at Monarch where they were doing mining of various things, and they would bring it down on the narrow gauge, and they would go down towards where the old stockyards were, where the sale barn is now, and they had to, they would hook the narrow gauge cars onto what they called the barrel, and they would tip them over, and they would tip the ore into a standard gauge gondola. And it was somebody designed it and built it. It was an unusual thing, one of the few maybe in the country. But that was kind of a famous thing that unfortunately was dismantled many years ago because the narrow gauge tracks were taken up. And I remember 1955, I think they started removing some of the narrow gauge things. But the railroad was the main thing, and of course we had what my grandma used to call people that did fine sewing down on what we called West Front Street at that time. And Laura Evans was a famous lady because of her so-called profession, I guess. But and now at the smelter during Prohibition, that's where you could buy bootleg whiskey, I was told, by people that knew. But and downtown Salida was an active place. We had numerous grocery stores. I suppose we had half a dozen. There were three or four on F Street and Alexander's Mercantile, and over on 2nd and G, Vaughn's had a grocery store, and there was Billy Burns Meat Market, and Sam Muto over there on West 1st Street, where there's now a liquor store. And Mr. Calloway had us. No, it wasn't Mr. Calloway. He was a barber. But there's a lot of history concerning those old buildings where Lawyer Pharmacies is now. That was an opera house at one time. Mrs. Lawyer verified that the other day. And the old opera house, that was a great opera house, which is now the theater, of course. And when we were in high school, they had a balcony up there, and the balcony extended down to each side of the building. It was quite a beautiful building, and I think it still is. It's maybe not as quite as elegant as it used to be, but that was a central place for entertainment and so forth. And of course, the Elks Club was built in 1905 or something, 1908 or something like that. And that was a very active fraternal organization. And up there's other organizations around town, the Masons, and they finally, when the Red Cross Hospital was closed, which was operated by some individuals, there was Dr. Coakins was the head of this, the DNRG hospital, but there was another doctor, I can't think of his name right now, and they had the Red Cross Hospital. But I was in the Red Cross Hospital when I was a little kid, because Dr. Smith was on the staff there, Dr. Howard Smith, who lived up across from the courthouse, across from what used to be called Halguno Park, which is now Tonoff Park.
And now, you're talking about the Red Cross Hospital up on G Street by Safeway?
Yeah, that was... Yeah. And I can't remember when it was closed, but it was closed somewhere between 1940 and 1950, someplace in there. But it was active, and there was competition between the two hospitals as who was on the staff of which one, and both of them had surgical suites and so forth. But soon the Red Cross Hospital just couldn't make money, I guess. Mr. Kimball was the last administrator that I recall, and he was a famous golfer also. But and of course, I was always interested in sleight of golf club. And it isn't generally known, but my father and Dr. Coakham started the sleight of golf club in 1926. I have some articles that's about that. In fact, there's a plaque up in the golf clubhouse, which I gave them last year about the stories about when that golf club was started, 1926. And it's still in the same spot, of course. In 1938, it was one of the projects the same time the slide swimming pool was organized. And the clubhouse was built, and it was a beautiful log building, which it still is. Slida swimming pool was opened in that year. Before that time, we could swim down at Wellsville. And when I was a little kid, they had swim day in the summertime. And the dads or mothers would take a carload or several carloads of kids down there to swim all day long. And that was a big event, because my dad took me and my brother and others down there many times, as did other parents.
That was in the river?
Mm-hmm.
That was swimming in the river?
No, there's remnants of the old Wellsville pool down there, and I had several pictures in here of the old Wellsville pool. And it was a big ride. Hell, it's 6 miles down there or something like that. But also you could go up to Poncha Springs. They had a little round pool. I was up there many times, and they had sweat baths up there because of the natural Poncha Springs that comes down today. And that was... exciting thing to do was to get to go swimming in a real swimming pool. But Wellsville, you can still see the remnants of the pool down there in one spot or two. And there was a hotel down at Wellsville, and there was a hotel, I believe, up at Poncha Springs up on the mountain. So, but those things were big deal for us to be able to participate in those things. And the slide of pool was really first class at that time. And the golf club got some grass in there, I think in the early 1940s or sometime prior to that. After I think maybe it was 1938, because I remember I went up there and caddied a couple times for 50 cents or a quarter or something. And they had... sand greens, which a lot of feed places had, and sand, they didn't have any tee boxes and no grass really. And there was a little old clubhouse up there that it was about 15 by 20, I guess. And unfortunately, they tore it down. I think somebody bought it, but I'm not sure. But the golf club prospered and grew, and now we wish we had 18 holes, but we don't, and we may never have them. But those were some of the activities that we had around here. And you look around some of these, like where Gambles is now, there was Alexander's Mercantile was on the corner, and next to that was a jewelry store. And that's where, if you were a railroader, you could have your watch checked there, because they had to be exactly right. And next door was a bakery, and up the street on F Street was the meat market and the drugstore there. And there was a drugstore across the street, and there was one of them on the alley on the 100 block on F Street. And at that time, the Wagner's was on this corner where Lollier's is, and Wagner's were later moved down to the one at 1st and F Street. My mother worked there for Con Wagner. Mr. Wagner lived up on F Street in the 500 block, but the house was destroyed to make room for the telephone building. But we had always had at least three drugstores downtown. And there was a lot of business that was conducted here. And I remember the Western Union store was down on 1st and F, where the Penny Pincher building is now. And there was a guy who had a bicycle and a little cap and delivered telegrams to people. And we all had, not everybody had telephones in those days either. There was a lot of people didn't have telephones, and a lot of people didn't have a lot of things, and including inside bathrooms. There were numerous outhouses all over town until in the 30s and 40s, I guess, when they really clamped down on those sort of things. Because I remember taking a bath in a bathtub, you know, in Grandma's kitchen, because didn't have a bathroom. But later they had one. And of course, we talk about Smeller Town, or Quartz, Colorado, which was named after Mr. Quartz, who started that sometime prior to 1900. That was laid out in blocks and so forth. And we see the Smeller smokestack. Well, there was two smokestacks at that time. And I have a photograph on the wall here that shows there were like 20 railroad cars sitting around out there. And they did smelting from all kinds of ores all over the country. And unfortunately, the big smelter was built around 1915 or some time prior to that. But then it closed down in 1921 or something like that, because they didn't have enough business. But mining was carried on, and up in Monarch, and was carried on up there for a long time for furnished limestone to the CF&I down in Pueblo, until they closed that about 20 years ago. But mining was important. The old smelter, and we all called it Smelter Town, because that's, and the people that lived out there mainly were the Austrian folks, and some of them still live there. But that was a big business also. And later Cotter's had a creosote plant up there in the same area. And we had a lot of people worked up there in the 1940s. I remember it was, they did the railroad ties and all those kind of things right here in Salida. Caused a lot of contamination, too. You can ask one of our local contractors sometime. Because they had inches of creosoting and stuff and all over the place up there. But that was an industry. But we didn't have many industries. It was mainly trading dollars around in Salida, I guess, and many different kinds of merchants. But Mr. Hodding had the slight greenhouse at that time. And when I was a little kid, he used to ride around on his bicycle. And we had ditches running through Salida in the 1930s and early 40s. And the ditch went by our house across the street where Mr. Stewart lived. And my dad could irrigate our backyard with the city water from the ditch.
Where were you living then? Where's the house?
That was 1148 F Street.
Okay.
But a lot of people irrigated their lawns from ditches. And we had Mr. Turner, I think his name was, he had a bicycle and he carried a shovel and he maintained all the ditches in town. And but fortunately we had early fathers reserved some nice parks in Salida, and I'm glad that we didn't get rid of all the parks, although one time the mayor said, well, I'd sell it to Safeway if they wanted to buy it, because it was a maintenance problem and cost money for us to have Alpine Park. But Alpine Park was a center of a lot of activity. Every Sunday night during the 30s and 40s, they had a band concert. And you've seen pictures of the old bandstand, which unfortunately was torn down. And people would park all around, and the kids would run all over the park, but they had this light of band, mainly from kids in high school, although there were a lot of adults played in the orchestra. That was a big social event on Sunday night, because you get out of the house and go down there, and instead of sitting home listening to the radio and trying to get gangbusters or something.
But was the library there at that time?
Yeah, the library was built in 1908, and it was a fine library, and Miss Netterman was in charge of the library when I was in school, and her husband lived, and she lived there at 6th and D Street. He was a chiropractor, but where they had the fiction and so forth, she had a couple areas that were covered with a black cloth because she didn't think they were good for children to read. And I wanted a book of Mice and Men one time, which is a famous Steinbeck thing. She said, you can't read that. That's not a nice book. I took it anyway and read it, and it wasn't obscene, but she took care of seeing to it that the kids didn't get any bad literature, which probably wouldn't work very good today with the Playboy magazine or something. But I don't know what other things I can tell you about except...
Let's go back to the DNRG hospital. How did the town get that?
Well, as I understand it, this was kind of a central point for them, and they decided that they didn't want to have it in Denver. And you know, there were people all over from Grand Junction to northern Colorado. All of them worked for the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad. And they, as I understand the history of it, they just thought this would be a central place and a good place for them to have a hospital. And then later on, you know, when they were not interested anymore because... You know, the people could get hospital services other places, and so the hospital was going to be sold by the DNRG people, but at that time the hospital was operated by the union of the railroad people, and fortunately my father represented them, so through his efforts he got them to agree to sell the hospital to the people of Salida. So, as you know, when you go in the hospital, you can see it was after 1956, like 1958 or something, when the community got together with a fund drive, and I think we paid like $150,000 for that hospital. And it was saved. Otherwise, they were going to sell it to some private organization in California that had hospitals all over the country. So through the efforts of some people at that time, including my father, we got the hospital for the people of this community. And one thing I will remember that I was proud of was that back in about 1960 or so, there was a movement through the city council that we wanted to sell us the swimming pool and sell everything up on the mountain that we owned where the Poncha Springs are. And my dad said, well, we can't let that happen. So he said, you're going to be a spokesman against selling the hospital, because our good friend Elmo Bevington was going to buy, the hot springs. He was going to buy the swimming pool, all the property. There's 40 acres up on Poncha Pass and all the hot water and everything. He was going to buy it and put a motel there. So anyway, we had a pretty hot election here, and by 17 votes, we kept the swimming pool. And I'm proud that if it wasn't for me and my father, would have been gone. But we worked very hard, and I remember I was on the radio, and people were calling in questions, and people were criticizing us for not doing something and making, because the council said, well, we'll build you a swimming pool sometime. They didn't say where, when, or how. And if we hadn't taken action, we'd have lost the swimming pool and wouldn't have had it today. We'd had a nice motel out there with lots of hot water, and property on the mountain would be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that was one activity that I was proud of.
I'm glad you did it.
But other than that, this office has been my place of business since 1956 in the same room, and hope I'll be here a while longer.
I hope so. Now, you're on the hospital board still?
Yes, ma'am. I've been on the hospital board about 12 years now, and I represented the hospital for 20 years before that, and I attended most of the meetings because they thought I should be there because there were legal questions come up. And my term will be over in another year from next spring, and of course that'll be the end of my service on the board. But we have an excellent hospital. I don't think there's any small town in Colorado that has the facilities and the services that we have in the hospital, and we have some great physicians here. We've always had excellent medical care, and I think the people realize what a gem that hospital is, and always has been. But the hospital board takes some time to sit on that board and get things done, but it's rewarding, and so the hospital will be here for a long time. We just, one of these days, and we're going to have some meetings today and tomorrow about what's going to happen, whether we can expand the old building one more time and buy some more land someplace, or buy a new site for a new hospital, knowing that a new hospital would cost probably $25 to $35 million. And we don't have that much money, of course, but we got to look in the future. Some of the people in this community looked in the future, and that's why we have so many assets here that attract people. So now we have people that move in, as we all know, from all over the country, and enjoy our climate and all the activities that go on in the small town, things that we still enjoy. I don't regret having lived here and raised my kids here. I think it's a great place. We had good law enforcement. We had the greatest chief of police, one of the greatest, Harry Cable, and Leonard Post, and Darwin Hibbs, and Sheriff Tonoff, and guys that followed him. So we've had law enforcement. I worked very closely with them for years because I was an assistant district attorney for two different times, and we've had very good law enforcement, and we have a very modern fire protection team and equipment, and so we're up to date most ways.
There was one thing more. You started talking about your family, your first wife, and you had one son. What else happened to your family since then?
Well, my son is he lives in Durango, where he's employed, and he married Kathy Osborne. Her dad used to run what we called the Spa, which is now the Country Bounty Restaurant. And they have two boys, one of which is 32, and the other one's 26 or 7. And I have one great granddaughter that lives in Phoenix right now. My daughter lives in Kremlin, where she's lived for, I think it's about 15 years now.
What's her name?
Linda. And she has two sons who are in college. One of them is Stetson, the other one is Cody. By the first names, you probably know they live on a ranch.
Sounds like it.
And she lives on a ranch with her husband, who's been a rancher all his life. And but my Stetson is about to graduate from the University of Wyoming with a master's degree soon. And my other son, grandson, is in Western State, where he's doing very well academically, and he's also on the wrestling team. So I get to see them, not often enough, but pretty often. So we didn't have it was just my brother and I, and I had two kids, and that was it. Mm-hmm. My brother had four boys, and they were scattered around the country a little bit, but I've been very fortunate to have had my grandparents living here and having healthy parents. And my mom lived to be 91. My dad lived to be 81. So they were great parents and set a good example for me and my brother anyway.
Ed, where is your home now?
I live at 119 Mesa Circle. It's on, right on the... That was developed some years ago, and we built a house there about 21 years ago. And by sheer accident, it's on number 3 fairway at the golf club. So if a guy was inclined, you just crawl over the fence and go hit a few golf balls. It's not always appreciated by everybody, but we like living there, and we... I think Salida is a great place, and I don't want to live outside of town. I want to live in Salida, Colorado, and I probably won't ever leave now. Mm-hmm. It's too damn late now.
Enjoy it now.
Well, I've always enjoyed living here. It's a small town, is different than any other place. And you've lived here a long time too, and you lived in Denver, so you know what that's like.
And we came back here, you see.
Yeah, or Lafayette, or wherever it was. But it's it's just a great place to live, and I think people today are doing a lot more things in the community than we used to do, like the steam plant and what's happened down at Riverside Park. We've really made some great changes around here.
You watched them all.
I watched quite a few.
Yes, that's great. Well, thank you, Bob. You really told us a lot about Salida history.
Well, you know, I've tried to keep up. You know, I just found these things the other day. I have all of these little postcards that I've created. I mean, I created, bought someplace. This was taken over in front of the fire department. Those were the Wicker brothers. And I have some of their pictures, and pictures of F Street. And here's an old picture in the early 1890s, and here's a picture of Marshall Pass. Here's a picture of the hospital years, which looks pretty much the same. And here's a picture downtown where you can see the old Presbyterian church was up on the corner. I never quite forgave all the Presbyterians for tearing down that beautiful old church.
They have a beautiful one now, too.
Yeah, it is, but this was just a beautiful old brick building, and they tore it down and put a service station there. Of course, it's not a service station now. But anyway, that was progress at that time.
Well, let's call it changes.
But we also had many churches at over the church area where the St. Joseph's is and the Episcopal Church. And I attended Episcopal Church. And that the Baptist Church is on one corner, the Christian Church is on the other corner, the Methodist on the other corner, and across the alley was the Episcopal. And St. Joseph's was one time a small building, but I don't remember exactly when that church was building. But it's
very early, about 1908.
I think that's when it was, because I remember when my grandparents got married in the church, it was just that little building that was later the Catholic church, because they had a Catholic school when we were in school until just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it used to be 1 through 8, and a lot of the it was, and the nuns were there and taught at school, and they had a lot of kids. I don't remember how many, but they had a lot of kids who went to school over there. And we had the two priests, and several nuns were here all the time. But the churches have been a good part of the history of Salida. I'm glad the Methodists did what they did on their building. That's very nice. So I think there will be some, and we have more churches now than we've ever had. I think there's 20 of them or so. But it's been a very nice place to live. That's all I know.
Very good.